And let's start with our minute of turning inward, closing your eyes if that's a way that helps you to turn inward. It's not for everybody. Starting to notice your breath, if that helps. It doesn't help everybody. Whatever helps you to drop in, perhaps notice where there's any tension or tightness in your body. Place a hand there if that's helpful. Just noticing what's happening on the inner realm. For about a minute. In your own time, coming back to the present moment. If you wouldn't mind making sure that you are muted. I don't remember how to mute everybody. I know there's a way for me to do that. But just make sure that you're muted on your end, please. And then to unmute yourself when it's time to speak. So I don't see anybody in the chat. While you are gathering your thoughts and your feelings and your courage, I just want to say a couple of things, which is that I'm noticing an even greater amount of anxiety than there normally is in the world right now. And there is so much going on. I'm seeing surges in every sector of my life, personal and professional, in everywhere that I look, every conversation I have. It's a really intense time. It's just, there's so much. It's been intense. We've been coming up on a year of lockdown, of COVID time. And it takes a toll. It's taking a toll. We are so ready for this to be over, and it's not over, and we're going to be in it for a little while longer. So to just know that I don't think this creates necessarily new anxiety in us. I think it amplifies the anxiety that already lives in us. And in that sense, there can be some gift in it in terms of seeing our anxiety more clearly against the very stark backdrop of what is happening in the world. There may be new anxiety themes that show up, but the basic places of anxiety that live in you probably predated the time that we are in. So just to give some collective context, as I often say, as highly sensitive people, we are lightning rods. We're going to feel the collective anxiety. We're going to feel this tumultuous time that we're in with more intensity than a more typically wired person. So to be extra compassionate to yourself, to remind yourself of these additional layers that we are absorbing, that is part of the compassion, is the normalizing and the knowing that you're not alone. If it's feeling really hard, if you're tired, if anxiety is very loud, if it looks maybe a little different, or even if it looks exactly the same, that you are in good company. And This too shall pass. This incarnation of what we're in collectively, what it looks like right now, we're not going to be in this forever, but the tools are always the same. How do we navigate hard times? And in some sense, just being a human is a hard time. Good time too, and joy as well, but it's not easy being human. It's not easy being a highly sensitive human. It's not easy being in relationships, whatever those relationships are. It's just a lot, this plan. I'm not sure who invented it, but it's a lot. Okay, good. Courtney, I would love to connect with you too. Go ahead and unmute yourself, please. Hi.
Hi, thanks, Cheryl. So I've had a question for a while, but was always too nervous to say it. But I saw, since it's a small group, I wanted to try. So I think it's actually related to what you were just talking about. But I've noticed that lately, especially, but for a while now, I'm just tired a lot, but also getting up in the morning is just really difficult. And it's not so much a question as why. I mean, I've noticed when I was a kid, I used to struggle to sleep when I was anxious, but now anxiety tends to just knock me out. The more anxious I am, the more I just want to sleep. and so I don't feel unhappy or depressed. In fact, I struggled with relationship anxiety for like 4.5 years, and I just got married over the summer, and I actually feel so much better in that category, probably because of all this work that I've been doing lately. But it's in the morning. It takes me so long to just wake up. Like, it takes me at least an hour of snoozing my alarm to feel ready to get up. And I do feel better when I get up early and get things done and all that kind of stuff. But a lot of times if I force it before I feel like awake, I just feel kind of gross when I'm first up. And it takes me even longer to merge into my day. So I guess my question is more on advice for dealing with it, because I know there's a lot going on in the world. It makes sense that I'm tired. I might have a job change coming up. We might try to buy a house. Like, there's just a lot going on. So I know why I'm tired, but I just need to figure out how to, you know, get up and start my day.
So thank you for sharing, and I'm glad you found the courage to do so. And it's so common. I'm hearing all kinds of sleep stuff coming up right now, whether it's sleeping more or sleeping less or difficulty falling asleep or waking up. Or our sleep is, I think, often representative of our inner world and what's happening in our outer world. But my question for you is it a problem? Could it be that it's just what your body is needing right now? And is it possible to let your body do that and get that extra sleep?
It's not horrible, but I end up starting, because I'm working from home completely, but I end up starting my day later than I would like to and later than I really should for work. So that's where the problem comes in. And then I think it spirals me into more anxiety throughout the day. Like, oh, I started work late. I feel guilty about that. Like,
that. And so is it that, because it doesn't sound like you're operating at a really high level of anxiety or depression right now, which leads me to think that it's maybe more physiological, that perhaps there's, could even be like a nutrient or magnesium or something that your body's not getting. It could be that you're needing more sleep right now. And what would it be like to go to sleep earlier? Okay. Have you experimented with going to bed earlier? And does that make it easier to wake up earlier?
I've tried it a little bit and it doesn't do a whole lot, which is why I wasn't sure why I was feeling so groggy in the morning. Cause I would even sleep like 8 or 9 hours and still just feel like I needed to wake up so slowly.
I really feel, Courtney, that it's what your body is just needing right now, is to wake up so slowly. And that's the way that you are navigating this transition. It's a transitional time, right? Going to sleep, waking up. They're our last transition and our first transition of the day. Mm-hmm. And that there's something that your body is really needing for you to honor, that this is what you're needing. And so, sorry, work, I have to start a little later. And it sounds like really the place of attention is more around what happens around it, and perhaps the anxiety or the guilt that leads to some anxiety. And this is where it's tough, because we have these natural rhythms and we have these natural needs, and then we have to try to pretzel them into these systems that we're in that don't necessarily honor the individualized nature of humans, right? There's a lot of systems in place that assume that we all operate on the same timetable and the same rhythm and the same operate, you know, processing speed and all these different ways that we are formalized. So can you imagine deeply trusting that this is what your body needs? It needs to wake up slowly, and that when you fight it and you force it, that doesn't go very well either.
That's true.
And that the work is around giving yourself full permission to do that. And so if that means you work an hour later, mm-hmm. then you work an hour later. And so you're working from 10 to 6 instead of now, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Where does that land in you?
That is probably something I should focus on, just because I immediately just get stressed. Like, oh, why can't you just wake up? Why can't you just do that? And then I notice a lot of like heart palpitations around then too. And I've had like a couple things tested to make sure it's not like my thyroid or anything like that, but and it's not. Mm-hmm. So that's why I figured it was, at first I thought it was resistance actually to starting work, because I have some anxiety around work. But mm-hmm. I hadn't thought about that, just that the guilt kicks in immediately. So I will focus.
Yeah, to play around with, because so much of anxiety is what we tell ourselves about our natural rhythms and our natural responses, whether it's our grief or our sleep or any other kind of any way that ourselves are expressing themselves. And immediately the shame voice comes in and says, what's wrong with me? Mm-hmm. And so much of the work is to notice that and to just play around with what would it be like. Let's say you had a child and that child just needed a really long time to wake up for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. Maybe there is some mineral deficiency. Maybe the child didn't want to go to school. We don't really know. Mm-hmm. But we're just going to experiment with what's it like to let that child wake up on their own rhythm and love them through it, not judge them through it, but love them and respect that rhythm mm-hmm. through it.
Okay.
And just see what arises for you.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. Good. There's nobody else in the chat. Yes, Raising, go ahead. And I know, Nick, you're going to speak up. I just know you are.
Hi.
And I welcome it. Hi, Razy. Hello. Let me pin you so I can see you big. Okay.
Hi. So I'm having a hard time, like, being where I'm at. So even if I'm able to stay present, there's, like, this voice constantly that's, there's got to be something more to life, or there's got to be something bigger, especially when I wake up and I find myself here and I'm like, what am I doing here? Mm. What? Almost like this isn't my life, and mm-hmm. there's got to be something more. And it gets like tied into relationship anxiety too. So it's like, maybe there's someone else, but also in general, like, I should be doing something more, or I don't know, getting more out of life, being more, it's, and I don't know when to just accept, like, this is where I'm at and it's okay, and when to be like, because I read, let's say, Glennon Doyle's book, Untamed, and she talks about chasing that dirty bunny.
I haven't read it yet.
It's, she talks about like the tiger chasing that bunny, and like that's its life, and then it has the whole entire wild. So, and it just really makes me think, like, you know, that there's got to be something more. Mm.
Mm.
Yeah, I guess how to deal with that. Mm.
So, tell me how you are dealing with it. How are you meeting it when it comes up first thing in the morning and there's that sense of there has to be something more, and then it wants to attach onto your relationship? And I know, because I know some of your story, that is sort of the big question for you that you are grappling with right now in terms of where am I and where do I want to be? So tell me how you meet that moment.
Well, I try to not let it grab onto the relationship anxiety, because once I'm there, I'm really spiraling and I just don't want to go there. So I'm like, you decided to stay at least for now, and this is what we're doing right now.
Okay.
It's just more convenient. Doesn't matter if it's right or wrong. This is where I'm at. I'm just doing it for now. So that kind of goes to the side, but then it's still there. Like, even if I'm not putting it on the relationship, it's, well, I guess I distract from it a lot.
Mm.
You know, I start my day and it fades into the background. And then maybe when I go to sleep, it'll come back up.
Mm-hmm.
Or when I'll journal. But I mostly push it away.
Yeah.
It keeps coming back and I push it away. I'm like, too bad. This is life.
So what would it be like to not attach them to your relationship, which you're not doing, but still stay with that feeling or that question? Because it's too bad, this is life. No, it's not going to feel great.
No, it doesn't.
If you imagine, again, a parent responding to a child having a hard time, and you probably heard that exact line, it's too bad, deal with it, this is life, right? It's not the most compassionate response. Mm-hmm. It really doesn't do anything for the person to help them with whatever the experience is. And so what would it be like to stay with it, even for 10 minutes in the morning, to journal with it, to pray with it, to stay with your own experience of there has to be something more. What is it that my soul is longing for?
I guess it's hard for me to stay with it without spiraling into relationship anxiety. Mm-hmm. And that's what it is.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that is the discipline. And that's hard for everybody with relationship anxiety, or whatever the hook is for whatever anxiety, is to not make it about the thing and to say, I know you want to go there, self, but I'm going to keep bringing it back to me. What is needed inside of me? Where am I not nourishing my own self? Where am I cut off and disconnected inside my own self? Because for now, I'm staying in the marriage and I've made that choice. For now. So I'm going to resist that compulsion to focus there. It's hard. It's really hard to do. But do my best to keep bringing it back and still honor that feeling, that sense inside of emptiness, of numbness, or however you might describe it. Because I think when we're in the question of there must be something more, we're disconnected in some way or in several ways from our soul. And when I say soul, I mean our emotional life, or what lights us up in our minds from learning. So if you think of the four realms, we're learning our emotions, our physical selves, right? And then that spiritual realm. But it might be we're cut off from our passions, our interests, what we love doing. It might be we're cut off from, you know, something in the ancestral realm, or some trauma that has descended down into us that needs attention. There's so many ways that we can disconnect and are disconnected.
Right.
If you think of the question of there must be something more as an indicator of there's an emptiness, there's disconnects inside that need my attention.
It's more like a longing, I think, sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. A longing for.
I can't name it. Mm-hmm. But even as you're speaking, I can see some places where I know I could be, I could meet myself there more fully.
Yes.
Like, even as you were asking me the questions, that like things popped into my head and I'm like, yeah, I know exactly what I need to do.
Good. Good. Then there it is. That's where you put the attention, in those morning and evening liminal, vulnerable places where the busyness and distraction is not there. And that's when our inner selves speak up.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Okay.
Well, good. Now I see all kinds of hands raised. Okay, good. I think Austin, you had your hand raised. If you wouldn't mind, I'll turn to you now, Austin, but anyone who has their hand raised, just add yourself to the chat. That way I know the order that it came in. Hello, Austin.
Can you? Yeah, I can.
Great.
Well, first off, I just wanted to say thank you so much for putting your blog out there to the public for everyone to see and read. I kind of went through my own dark night of the soul about a year ago and came across your blog. I'm just kind of Google searching. And it meant so much to me to be able to read about this, to realize I didn't really know myself that well. And to really kind of come into what it means to be a highly sensitive person, a term I didn't know much about, and that I think really speaks to my soul as I've read about it and kind of, you know, reflecting back and reading some of your blogs and saying, it's kind of, I've kind of been like this my whole life, you know, and it kind of makes sense now. This is more of a temperament than it is a, you know, something to be wrong.
Yeah.
So really just kind of doing this work and going through this in the past year, really, and kind of just coming into more self-acceptance and stepping into sort of owning it has been a really exciting process and a really tough process as well. But I guess I just want to start by saying thank you so much for putting your content out there for free for the world to see, for people to relate to and to become better and help society.
Thank you,
Cheryl. I guess my question has to do with last group call. I think it was Jenny. Someone had brought up a question around work anxiety, mm-hmm. and what had sort of started my spiral into all of this and investigating this was some tough situations at work and lots of changes that had happened during that time and kind of loss of team members. But I think the specifics aren't too important to me now. I think what I'm curious to ask about is sort of I related to her concern she brought up about I'm thinking about doing something new or moving into a different kind of role or just kind of seeing what's out there, and I guess being concerned about moving into the wrong environment to me. And of course I know there's only so much I can control, and that's a lot of what this work has been about, is kind of growing the capacity to name how I'm feeling, observe kind of where my head's at, access that choice point to say, okay, that's out of my control, ignore it. This is within my control. I can do something about that, and kind of checking my own expectations. But I guess to get to my question, it's sort of with this newfound understanding of, okay, I'm generally more affected by my environment than the average person that I tend to meet. Mm-hmm. And I tend to notice the subtleties in my environment. I tend to notice the hard line on some coworker's mouth if they're upset about something. And while, you know, while I can stop and say, okay, this is how I'm reacting, and not like latch onto it as much or not react to it as much, it's still like, I guess it can be overwhelming just to, I guess, yeah, just to be a highly sensitive person. And so I guess the pattern I'm concerned about thinking about going into a new sort of role is that in the past when I've tended to get overwhelmed, I retract or I burn out, and eventually can lead to like sort of a depressed feeling. Mm-hmm. And so I guess the question is really just like, do you have any advice on really how to navigate the world as a highly sensitive person, a world that seems biased towards more and more stimulation? And when I often just feel so porous, even when I am taking steps to sort of, you know, take breaks or be mindful, that things like that I found have really helped.
Yes. Well, first of all, thank you, Austin, for being here. It's really good to connect. I haven't seen you on the calls before. I don't know if you've been there, but it's just nice to see your face, and it's nice to hear your story. And it's you have a beautiful heart and a beautiful soul, and it warms me to no end, especially when I meet highly sensitive men who are reclaiming and reconnecting with that innate sensitivity. It's so much of what the world needs right now. So keep doing everything that you're doing, keep doing your inner work. as far as being sensitive in a work environment, very challenging. I would encourage you, if you haven't read, to read the book Quiet. It's an extraordinary book, amazing book, about really the bias in our culture toward the extroverted ideal. And so it's more validation in terms of who you are and your wiring and how challenging it is to be a highly sensitive person in the extroverted world. I really encourage you to trust yourself when you do make the move in terms of finding an environment that's as close of a fit as you can find. Not always easy, but it's really important that you, honoring who you are now, being in this new place where you're at versus where you were a year ago, that you have a different internal barometer in terms of what you're even willing to step into, and to trust that not every work environment is going to be able to even barely match where you are. So we're not looking for a perfect match. I think that's really difficult to find in any work environment unless you work for yourself, which is part of the reason why I work for myself. Because I spent a tiny, tiny little bit amount of time in that other world and I couldn't do it. So, I've been really fortunate to be able to forge this path. And I think it's why a lot of highly sensitive people do forge their own path. But if you're going into the corporate world or any kind of 9-to-5 world that's not of your own creation, we're not looking for 100%. We're looking for like an 80%, right? What are the values of the work culture? Do they honor the individual, right? Or am I just purely expected to be a cookie cutter formula, plug into their wheel? So really trusting yourself in the process of your search, trusting that sense in your body of this is good enough, this is an 80% or higher, or no, I can't do it. I'm going to have to hold out faith that there's something else that will be a better match, because nothing is worth squashing who I am, right? And my well-being. So it so much of this comes down to self-trust, and you'll hear me say that over and over again, right? That place inside that does know, is this a yes or is this a no? Mm-hmm. What do you think? Where does that land?
I totally relate to that. And as I've been growing that sort of wise inner self and learning to trust myself more, it's kind of shown up even as I start to write out questions. Oh, I might want to ask this to Cheryl. And then I think about it a little bit more and I go, oh, well, actually, this is what I think I might actually want to do. Oh, this is probably what Cheryl might say along these lines, perhaps. I mean, of course, it's all in my head, but it's, yeah. but it's nice to realize that, like, oh, like I do have maybe some of these answers. And if I feel like I'm stuck, then, oh, I can just, I can reach out and see what the other perspective is. So it's really empowering.
It's everything, really. That self-trust is your North Star. And that wise inner parent is your self-trust. It's that voice that's coming in and saying, I think I can respond to this question. I don't have to outsource it. Right? I think I can play around with this and find my own wisdom. And then lo and behold, the wisdom is there.
Thank you for sharing, Cheryl.
Thank you for sharing.
Oh, and I just wanted to say, I'm glad that what I spoke about last time spoke to you. This is Jenny.
Thank you.
Oh, great. Yeah. Thanks, Jenny.
Yeah. If there's anyone else who would like to chime in and share anything towards whoever has spoken so far, towards Austin or Courtney, please go ahead, or Raisy. And then I will move on down the line to Ivy. Nice long list now. Great. Oh, thank you, Victoria. Yeah, there's the book I mentioned, Quiet. It's an amazing book. Highly sensitive podcast. Thank you, Amber. She has a good episode on being highly sensitive in an extroverted work environment. Fantastic. I was wondering if she had written The Highly Sensitive Person at Work. I know she wrote it
about the highly sensitive person in love, but that's excellent that she has that podcast. Thank you so much for that. Okay, good. Anyone else would like to share before I turn to Ivy? Just go ahead and unmute. Go ahead, Amber.
That's not Elaine Aaron's podcast. It's someone else who's done her own podcast. And it's good. It's like a bunch of short episodes, but
wonderful. Austin,
I just wanted to thank you, Austin, for sharing having two highly sensitive men in my life and being an HSP myself. I just think it's so brave of you. And I really appreciate your willingness to show your heart and tap into that part of you. I think that's a huge gift that you're giving yourself and other people. So thank you.
Amen. Yes, times a thousand. Mm-hmm. Good. Anybody else before I connect with Ivy?
I actually wanted to say thank you to Nick.
Who is speaking?
Hi, it's Raisy.
Hi.
Again, I actually wanted to say thank you to Nick. I related so much to what he said on the last call, and also the blog post was, it really made me tear up. I almost could have written the whole thing by myself. Mm. So thank you, Nick. That was so cool.
Thanks. Yeah.
Good. Anybody else? Okay, go ahead, Ivy.
Hi. Okay, so a little backstory. I'm in my car again because about 6 months ago, we moved in with my in-laws with the intention of building next door to them. And with building prices being crazy, it's kind of up in the air now. So we're sort of in a holding pattern.
Mm.
But I am in a home that is, it is extremely lonely. Everybody in the house is very lonely and everybody retreats to their own space. And it's also very cluttered with the things of my mother-in-law and her parents because she settled their estate. Anyway, so it's been a really hard situation to navigate, and thought maybe you could help me with a particular situation that arose yesterday. My mother-in-law in particular is pretty angelic. She's got such a good heart, but extremely sensitive. Gosh, and
Ivy?
Yeah?
It's okay to cry.
So earlier this week, I found a spider. This is going to sound kind of crazy, but, I found a spider in the sink, and something that she and I had talked about was when we found spiders and how cool they are, and, that we wanted to not kill them, but take care of them. We agreed that I would take them to the garage if I found a spider. So, I found a spider in the sink. I took it to the garage. And she had been nurturing a house spider. and I think this was the.
Did we lose you, Ivy? Ivy, you froze if you can hear us, me. Oh, there you're back.
Wow.
Ivy, we lost you for a minute. We lost you for a minute there. Can you repeat what you said? You said she'd been nurturing a house spider.
Yeah, she'd been nurturing a house spider. And I thought, and she, I took it outside and it was the one that she had been nurturing. So the spider's gone. She was in mourning for this little spider. And I was taken aback a little bit thinking about how small, something so small could just tip her over the edge. She's been dealing with crippling anxiety these past months because of hide in the house. We feel one way, she feels the other. anyway, I just feel like that me taking a spider outside kind of tipped her over the edge. And I felt extreme guilt over something that seemed so almost small in comparison. And then I felt awful because I thought, person, like, and then it was like, it's a spider. And I thought about all the things that are going on in the world and all the things that she neglects, that she can't engage with. Mm. And like relationships with people. And I thought, how do I live like this when I'm highly sensitive and they're highly sensitive, mm-hmm. and I'm not feeling the same kind of anxiety that she is? How do I navigate that? How do I support and love and be understanding, and not feel so guilty when I am just living life and watching her struggle to live? Does that make sense? I don't know if I'm expressing myself, but
you're expressing yourself beautifully. It's a little bit choppy. I'm going to ask you to take your video off because I think it might help with the connection, even though I love seeing
it. I gladly will. So, so
you're still very, very choppy, Ivy.
To navigate living and supporting, like, and move on, like, if I can't help, yeah, support her, or I don't know.
Yes, thank you.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. It's still choppy, but I think I have the essence of your question and you expressed it beautifully. It sounds like she is a highly, highly, highly sensitive person. It's all on a spectrum. And hold on a second here. I just lost it. All of you, I'm gonna go back to my gallery. Okay. It's all on a spectrum. So she's at an extreme end, and it is very difficult to be at that end in the world that we live in. It's difficult to be anywhere on the highly sensitive spectrum, but to be at the extreme end would be almost impossible, especially in her generation, to have been able to meet that and tend to that so that it wouldn't morph into anxiety. So I think what you're asking is, there's a guilt piece coming up for you. How do you live your life knowing that she's suffering so greatly? How do you honor her sensitivity, her pain, while still living a life? I think it's around shifting the guilt into compassion where you can. It sounds like you have a lot of compassion for her. But also for yourself, that you are in a living environment that is not ideal for you. The sense I get is that we started out by saying it's a very lonely environment. And so it sounds like the tendency for you is to also focus more on her than on yourself, perhaps, on your own pain. It looks to me like it's difficult for you to stay with your own pain, to share that pain, which it is for so many people, maybe everybody on some level. So what would it be like to hold her with so much compassion and light and know that she's suffering, know that you are not responsible for her suffering, and to also bring the attention back to you and your own loneliness, what it is to be in this house of loneliness, this house where there's clutter everywhere. The feeling that I get is quite stifling. How do you breathe? Where's your own space? Right? You're absorbing her and her ancestral line and all of the stuff from that line. And she cleared out her mother's house, I think you said. So that's a lot of energy in that house, in the physical structure of the house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. And I'm watching my husband struggle tremendously with the stuff component. Mm-hmm. And it triggers his anxiety.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And watching him struggle and just every day feeling like he has to clean his office because he's working from home and get rid of more stuff.
Yes.
We moved in with the intention to help clear.
Yeah.
And it just feels stuck. Yeah, and stifling.
Yeah. And
especially when there's this sense that there is, that there's so much more, that it is relationships. It's about people, not possessions. And, I don't know.
You're bringing something to light here that I think many of us are struggling with during this time of COVID, where we are on top of each other, where there's not enough space, where our typical ways of out-breath and in-breath, of oxygen flow, is not available to us. So that's certainly not the case for everybody. Some people have the opposite, where there's just immense aloneness if they're living alone. But for those of us that are with family, it's really hard. It's really hard. You know, we are not used to spending this much time with each other and sharing this kind of physical space. And so it's like this, you're in this, particularly you're in this ancestral lineage of stuff. And it's not the physical stuff, it's the representation of all this stuff. And you're watching your husband suffer through it. And the intention was to help clear, and yet it's been the opposite. It's been this stagnation. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there aren't really answers, but there's clear seeing, there's compassion, there's naming what the situation is that you're in. And through that, hopefully there's letting yourself feel your feelings through this.
There have been a lot of feelings to feel.
Yes.
So, I have had immense resistance to journaling my whole life. And so your constant reminders, challenges to do that and push through that have been appreciated. I did it last night when I was at a breaking point after this ordeal. And it was, me asking a lot of questions, a lot of tears, and it did open up space, because she actually approached me later in the kitchen and we talked for an hour, and it was very healing. But at the same time, it was now what now? And I, like Austin, like I know the answers are there. And so I hesitate even raising my hand or asking a question, because I do have confidence that the answers are there.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also trying to keep myself open to resources and advice that,
yes,
that maybe I'm unaware of. And so,
yes. Yeah. And I encourage people to speak here, not so much looking for answers, but just to share your experience, to be witnessed, to see other people on the screens nodding their head, offering support. That's what heals. It's not someone giving you some advice. There's no advice to be given, really. This is the situation. This is what it is for now, right? But it's in the witnessing. It's in the compassion. I also want to say, Ivy, how deeply it touches my heart that you and your mother-in-law save spiders. That this is the highly sensitive person in a sentence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm actually in awe at her reverence for the natural world. Mm-hmm. She's taught me quite a bit about it. And and very analogous to life, I think the more I've come to understand their purposes, the less I fear them. Like, I actually have no fear. And that is a shift for me. Mm-hmm. And I've found that that's the same with people, with anybody who's different than me. The more I take time to understand,
yes,
the less afraid I am to live and love and all those things. So.
Yeah, beautiful. Beautiful. You will give my son's heart, because my younger one, not a day passes where he doesn't say to me, "Why do people kill bugs?"
Mm.
And it breaks his heart into 1,000 pieces.
Mm. Well, we're trying here. So
thank you. You know, if your mother-in-law is open to resources, I don't know if she's a reader or what she might be open to in terms of her anxiety, but braiding sweetgrass is just extraordinary. An incredibly healing medicinal book. If she'd be open to reading my book, The Wisdom of Anxiety.
She is working through it, and she so I have given it to her after many testimonials.
Okay, good.
So
good. Thank you, Ivy.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, I'm just gonna read through the chats really quickly. Doris is asking if anyone's using the form for this course. Every time I check it, there doesn't seem to be anything new written. Am I missing something? So I post when there's a new topic. It is not a hugely active form, I think, because I've encouraged people to go to their small groups, come to the calls. I prefer people to be off their screens rather than on, or I mean, we're on a screen right now, but in real time. So the form is not a huge part of this course. It wasn't in the first round either, which actually pleases me. But if any of you post on there and you don't receive a response and you would like one, please let me know, and I'm more than happy to respond. Okay, Amber has to go. I will skip her. Okay, and Sandy, I think, has a note for you, Ivy. Good, I will go back up to see where we're at. Looks like Sarah.
Hi.
Hi.
I think I love the way you just put not necessarily having an answer and having a answer to a question, because I feel like everything that was discussed kind of touched upon what I've been experiencing, but I'll still share. So I've gotten so much from the course and being able to come to these calls and being able to talk with my small group. And I feel like I'm kind of in this middle zone right now, kind of transitioning back into the real world, and then I'm going back to work in person, and I got my first dose of the vaccine and all this stuff. But also at the same time, like my dad was just really sick with COVID, and now I have an aunt who's really sick with COVID. So kind of dealing with all of that weight and somehow going back to work in person. And I'm so happy that Courtney said what she did in the beginning, because I need so much sleep right now, like 10 hours and still not enough. And I'm just forcing myself out of bed, and it's actually painful. Like, what is this? It's like 10 hours. Like, I'm not, you know, I feel like a toddler, but like it is, you know, if my body needs it. And I guess when it comes down to it is that I'm going back to work in person. I have an hour commute, so I'm losing those 2 hours. I'm sleeping an extra 2 hours, and all of the time that I feel like I had to, and when I do each of your emails, I write in a journal. I'm so hearty about it. I meditate. I'm losing all of that time.
Yeah.
And the transition is so hard. And I feel like I'm scrapping any time for myself. And then my relationship is just completely put in the back burner. And I feel terrible for my loving partner, because at the end of the night, I'm just like a shell of myself. And it's been really hard. So I mean, I don't know if there's any answer for that, but just if anyone can relate.
It speaks to the faultiness of our systems, right? That don't allow for the soul. It just, there doesn't allow for soul time. And I don't have an answer, because it's a systemic problem that takes a toll on each individual. It's this collective problem of our the way that we have organized our lives does not allows for so little time to nourish. And I think it's going to be a shock, and you are in the first round of experiencing that shock of having had this time, which has been challenging, but also has been, I think, a great gift for a lot of people in terms of self and in terms of getting back those windows that are eaten away by commute, for example. I mean, 2 hours. Ugh.
Yeah.
It's just heart-wrenching. 2 hours. But here's what I can say. I don't know how you're commuting. Driving, or is it public transportation?
Driving.
So if you can listen, right? It's a time to listen. Listen to the audios. Listen to other podcasts. Let that be nourishing time, however best you can do it. And then it's like what Austin was saying. It's taking those breaks in the middle of a workday. It's finding that 20 minutes of using your breaks very well, so that you're not like checking Instagram or something, or, you know, whatever we do to fritter away time, but that you take that lunch break and really nourish on all levels, not just your body. The sleep, it's really interesting, isn't it? It makes so much sense to me, this great need for sleep that's come up. And I've heard that from so many people. That's like this, just the exhaustion of what we're up against. So I don't know that you would take from that in order to put back into self, but you might experiment there. What would it be like to get a little bit less sleep, but just wake up that 20 minutes earlier to have the time to write in my journal? Because that 20 minutes can go a really long way.
Yeah, thank you. I worked so hard to start my schedule earlier. And then kind of what Courtney said, it was just starting to feel like, I have to listen. Like, there was no choice. Like, I had to just sleep a little more. But I'm excited to get to that point again. I think I'm just in the transition.
Yes, you are in a transition. And it's a collective transition of re-entering a world that we haven't been in. And that in itself is just kind of exhausting, of like getting our feet wet. I mean, I've heard from people too. I see it in my kids after having been isolated for so long, and then just being around people was exhausting. My son came home after his first day of school. He was like a zombie. He was comatose. What happened to you? He's like, I'm not used to being around people. No. And I'm hearing that as we are slowly reopening, that just that alone, the social aspect, we've lost the muscles, right? We've just lost all those muscles. And so it is a big transition to reestablish. I don't think you're going to be in this place where you are right now forever, right? It's a transitional reentry that you're in.
Thank you. Yeah, I think it's a compilation of that. And then even though I'm vaccinated, still feeling responsible for the medically fragile population that I work with, because I could still be a carrier. So I'm still just like, I don't care about myself as much as everybody else, you know? So it's like, I don't want to be the one with it, you know? but I don't care if I get it. I care about everyone else. You know?
It's so much to hold. It's so much to hold. And then your father and your aunt, and it's in your world. It's so much to hold. And of course, we can hold it when we have more time to process, but this is the piece that you're up against. So yeah, so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sarah. Okay. Good. Where are we at? We have about 5 minutes. I'd love to connect with you, Cindy. It'll be short if that's okay, but I honestly feel like we've been in this timeless realm together. It's been really, really beautiful space. Go ahead, Cindy.
Yeah, thank you, Cheryl. So my question's about shame, and I feel like it might take a little longer than 5 minutes. So why don't I wait until another call, and then yeah. I can give it back to you, or we can open it up to others.
Okay, sounds good.
Thanks.
Yeah, good. I'm just going to open it up to the group right now, since we only have a few minutes left. Anybody would like to share, comment, offer some support. Go ahead, Nick, please just unmute yourself. Yep.
Cindy, you piqued my interest because I was actually going to share a really, really short shame story that just happened to me about, I would say, 2 hours ago. Mm-hmm. And I'll give you an incredibly short Cliff Notes version, which is I was with my parents' house. I'm an only child. My parents don't live far from here. I don't see them or call them at least every couple of days. They wonder what's happened to me. So I went over there and my parents love to tell stories about the past. And so this is how they spend most of their time. And we were talking about a cousin of mine who bought a used car and it turned out to be a lemon. And so now he's fighting with that. And my mother looked at me and said, "Don't you remember when your dad sold that green truck when you were 3 years old? You cried about that truck. Wasn't that stupid?" And she said it jokingly. And she's not a cruel person. My whole family is a bunch of comedians and I totally get it. But there was a piece of me, because of the journaling work I've been doing and learning about my highly sensitive nature, that I realized how much I'd shamed myself for that. And in that moment, I could picture that hideous green truck. And she's right, it was ugly. But I was a three-year-old and it was my daddy's truck. And I watched it go down the road with some stranger and I was standing in the driveway and crying. Mm-hmm. And somewhere she knows how sensitive and beautiful that is. But when she tells the story, it's kind of this mocking thing. And consciously, I don't think I register it as shame, but I'm understanding that subconsciously I have. And so it's important that we kind of recognize how we judge ourselves based on others' comments with shame, because being sensitive is something I've always been, it's something I always will be. And I'm actually proud of it because it makes me a more valuable resource to the people I care and love, both in this house and outside. So, shame is a complicated thing, but I think through shame, we can actually develop appreciation for the things that people have shamed us for.
Mm. Really beautiful, Nick. It reminds me of the post I shared a while back when we sold our car and I cried like my cat had died, like for real. So yes, that little three-year-old you was shamed. Where that shame lands in you, noticing it now, noticing where those, you know, well-meaning comments land, that they're, your mother's not a mean person, but it's still not a kind thing to say. It still has that of shame. Huge topic, the shame topic. I look forward to connecting more about it with you, Cindy. Good. Anybody else before we close out with our 1 minute of quiet together? Okay, thank you all so much for being here. Always so good to see faces. I will look forward to connecting in a couple of weeks. If you can stay longer than a minute, please do so. As you turn inward, just let yourself feel whatever is shimmering inside of you, is thudding inside of you. Whatever has landed, whatever has been stirred over this past hour, to notice it, to bring breath and kindness to it. About a minute.